Wednesday night this week, there will be a special shiur in the shul that the Roses are sponsoring, Lezecha Nishmas, both of Shruli's parents, and it's going to be given by Rabbi Moshe Tzvi Weinberg. It's for men and women at 9:15 on Wednesday night. If you have never heard of Moshe Tzvi Weinberg speak, he is really spectacular. He's really a fantastic, and inspiring speaker. So I would strongly recommend for those who are available and around that you take advantage of that opportunity. But for tonight, you're stuck with me. So let's talk about the requested topic. The requested topic for tonight was, let me get the right title, peer pressure. I like using the book. Peer pressure, how to pressure your children not to be pressured. And as Rabbi Balzman added the tagline, all the cool women are coming. So, okay, get it? Okay. So, what? No, it's not really in there. So tonight we're going to be talking about peer pressure, which, let's see, how do I introduce this topic? On Thursday, I was in the DRS based medrash, and one of my children's rebbeim came over to me and said, "I have to apologize to you." I said, "Why do you have to apologize to me?" You're always nervous a little bit when someone, when that's like the opening of the conversation. "Why do you have to apologize to me?" And he said, "Well, I might have said something that could be construed as completely making fun of the whole 10-minute halacha concept in shir." I was like, okay, I don't really care, that's fine. What did you say? He said that he was telling the Dvar Torah that Yaakov and Esav were in their mother's womb, and we know the Medrash tells us, Rashi quotes, that Yaakov was kicking to get out at the Bate Medrash, and Esav by the Beis Avodah Zarah, and the Achronim asked the question that the Gemara Nida tells us, that a malach inside that a child inside the womb is learning with a malach the entire time. So the Bali Musra and the Achronim asked the question, why was Yaakov eager to get out at the Bate Medrash? He was learning Kol HaTorah Kula from whoever's teaching in the Beis Medrash is not going to be as good as the malach that he's got teaching him inside the womb. So he said that he gave two answers. One answer is that even if you could learn from a malach, but if your classmate is Esav, you need to switch yeshivas. You need to get away from such an influence. The other answer he gave was that, yeah, he was learning from a malach, but it was very easy to learn from a malach. There's no work involved, there's no toil, there's no effort. So it was more important to go out to experience the toil and the effort of learning Torah. And he said, so I may have said that, like, if you have a few minutes to learn, you should actually sit and work and learn instead of just listening to 10 minutes of someone else tell you halacha. So he may have said that. So I said, but whatever that second shot is, the first shot is very good for my shiur on Sunday night. I didn't tell him this, but I was thinking this. The first shot, that Yaakov had to get away. Why did he have to get away? Because Esav was such a profoundly negative influence that even if you find the best school in the world, it's just that the kids there are terrible. But the teachers are great, the administration's great, everything. But the kids are just horrible. They don't have midos. They say nasty things. They do horrible things to each other. So get your kid away from that class. You don't want to be in that environment. So that I figured that we'll use the parsha as a way of introducing this topic. But before we delve into the topic, a quick disclaimer. I feel like I say this a lot, but it's true a lot. I'm not really qualified to talk about this topic. I was at a wedding just this evening in Tarrytown, and I was looking around for like psychologists, you know, to get some etzas of what to say on this topic. But I am a parent, and I'm a parent in the same community that your parents, that you are parents in, and I assume that we struggle with many of the same things as it relates to peer pressure. So I'm going to be sharing, it's just that I've been thinking about this because I've had to present about it, so I don't know if everyone else has been thinking about it. So I'm not really more qualified, it's just that I've had some time to think about it. Gavri always says at his chaburas, I'm not a rabbi, all it is that I've been thinking about this topic for a whole week and you haven't. So that's my disclaimer. I've been thinking about this topic for a whole week and maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Another important point of introduction, and this is something Mori V'Rabbi Rabbi Kamenetsky always emphasizes when talking about anything to do with children and with wanting to make sure that our children are raised right, is to always, always, always remember to daven for your kids. All the parenting books in the world and all everything else that we do right, those are all important, but it's also really, really important to get some siyata d'shmaya, because there are a lot of people that do everything right and things still don't turn out the way they would have wished that they do turn out. There are no guarantees in life. We have to realize that it's not all under our control, that our children ultimately will have free choice on a lot of things. And when it comes to anything relating to parenting, we do have to remember to include our children in our tefillos. And it doesn't come naturally in the sense that there's no bracha in Shmona Esrei about children, which is a great kasha. Why not? Meaning, what do people daven for more than that? But we'll leave that kasha for a different time, maybe a time that I actually have an answer. But there is no bracha in Shmona Esrei about children, so we have to remember, Shema Kolenu, that we should think of, which is the bracha that sort of includes everything and any bakasha that we want, that we have to remember to say a prayer for our children, that they should have the strength to make the right decisions. It's also always important to remember when parenting that the most effective method of parenting is to model proper behavior. And if our children see, in when it comes to peer pressure or anything else, if our children see that we are behaving properly, and regardless of how diverse our friends are, that we maintain our principles and our standards, and we should be friends with a diverse group of people, but we're still not going to be influenced by whatever their standards might be. So that sets a proper model for our children. So that's just the introduction. Now, a little bit of background in terms of how kids work, particularly when they get to the adolescent years, when they get to, let's say, junior high school, and then high school is where it really goes awry. You know, I spoke in a girls' high school this week, and I was saying I don't really have much experience speaking to. I have a lot of experience speaking to high school boys. They just weren't getting all the sports muscles that I was saying, like, it wasn't connecting. So I mentioned how I have my wife and I are very fortunate to have four sons, and even more fortunate that our fifth is a girl, our daughter. And that when our sons ask us, why is it that you love Chani more than you love us, we calmly explain to them that it's because she loves us more than you love us. There is an experience that, you know, I look forward to each and every day. I come into the house and I'm invisible to my sons. They don't know that I walked in or see me. I walk right by them. Sometimes I have to like push them to let them know that I'm there. But my daughter will immediately, Abba! Abba's home. But I know for sure there's going to come a day, and it's probably going to be sooner than I would like, where I'm going to walk into the house and she'll be like, oh my God, Abba, you're so annoying. And that's gonna hurt, but that's natural. That's part of the process. That's what happens to kids. The Mesilas Yesharim in Shar HaZihirus explains that what happens to children as they develop into adolescence, but he's really talking about even by adults, that Hamafsid HaShlishi, says, the third thing that can take away a sense of Zihirus, a sense of alacrity and of a sense of being quick to do the mitzvot Hashem, is hu hachevra, that a person is with the wrong chevra. And then he defines, what does the wrong chevra mean? Dahainu chevras hatipshim v'hachotim, and a chevra of fools and sinners. Rav Moshe Weinberger, in one of his shiurim, said, if you have a teenage boy, his chevra is 100% a chevra of tipshim, and 50-50 whether chotim also, but definitely a chevra of tipshim. Ki hine anu roim pa'amim rabos, the Mesilas Yesharim goes on to say, we see plenty of times, afilu achar shenes ames etzal adam chovas ha'avoda va'azihirus ba, even if a person knows the right thing to do, yisrapa o yavar alezer dvar mimena kidei shelo yilugu alav, that people make the wrong call, they do the wrong things, knowing that they're doing the wrong thing, because they don't want to be made fun of. They don't want to be the only kid that dresses that way. They don't want to be the only kid that has their hair that way. They don't want to be the only kid that can't see that movie. They don't want to be the only kid that is different than everybody else. They're afraid of being mocked. People in general are afraid of this. Kids especially will do things that they know to be wrong, and there are scientific explanations as to why this is so in terms of the development of the brain in adolescence. Teenagers in particular, and really adolescents in particular, have an excessive need for friends. We believe in the value of friendship. Judaism believes in the value of friendship. Kenei lecha chaver. A person should work hard to acquire a friend. Make sure that there's someone that you can relate to and that you can speak to. But adolescents tend to put extra emphasis on that relationship, and very often at the expense of family relationships. They tend to overvalue friendships and undervalue family relationships. That's how they're wired, that's how they're made. You just have to sort of get through it till they get to the point where they'll, you know, sort of fall back into balance. Kids have a tremendous need to fit in. Rav Moshe Weinberger pointed out that, you know, we say in the Shavuot Brachos, Ava v'yachla v'shalom v'reyus. So what's reyus? Reyus is friendship, right? Reyus also has the word ra in it. Friendship can be a very negative force in a person's life. Chaver is osios charev. It could be a destructive force in a person's life. It can also be a very gratifying and fulfilling and helpful force in a person's life. Just to explain a little bit of the research as to why it is that kids tend to be so easily influenced to make the wrong decisions, and why it is that peer pressure is such a critical topic in a teenager's life, in an adolescent's life, and not so much, and not as much in an adult life. I did a little bit of searching around online, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal in June 2013 where Shirley Wang writes that social acceptance sets off pleasure receptors in the brain to produce a certain degree of pleasure that requires action. So when a teenager is with a group engaging in a specific behavior, the need for approval is so pleasurable that it suppresses the judgment or reasoning that may be required to avoid a problematic situation. The pleasure that a teenager gets from social approval makes the brain and body feel great, leaving the child believing he made a correct decision when in fact he or she may have made a choice without taking ample time or having the foresight to consider the consequences. So these are the facts. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, when we raise our children, the knowledge that there's a tremendous need, a biological need almost, a tremendous need for social acceptance, and that there's an overvaluing of friendships over other important positive relationships, and a terrible fear of being made fun of being different. Now, given all of that background, a child is ripe for falling prey to peer pressure. So let's first start with something a little more positive, the blessing of peer pressure, because peer pressure can be a very great bracha as well. Let's face it, we're all affected by social pressures. Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, would have a very hard time existing if it was purely based on Yirat Shamayim. If it was just us and God on a desert island, the amount of times we'd probably make the wrong decision if it were not socially unacceptable to break the halacha in certain ways would probably not be something we'd be proud of. It happens to be we tend to live in communities with each other where it's socially, you'd be an outcast in our community if you didn't keep kosher, you'd be an outcast if you didn't keep Shabbos, you wouldn't be accepted as part of the social, not necessarily an outcast, but you'd be someone's kiruv project, meaning you wouldn't be part of a social circle. Social pressures help us. They help us keep us in line where things aren't, you don't have to think about, oh, should I buy treif meat today or should I buy kosher meat today? We don't think about that. We just buy the kosher meat, no matter how much more expensive it is. We end up buying the kosher food. It's not even a conscious choice. And part of that is, part of the reason, part of what keeps us in line is social pressure. So for our kids, it can work that way as well. If they're in the right chevra, if they're in the right group of friends, and it's not like there is the right one and the wrong one necessarily, but if their group of friends has certain things that they value that are good and that are positive, it can have a very positive effect on children. In addition to that, just the value of friendship is something that's extraordinarily valuable. I was once at a Sheva Brachos many, many years ago. I think it was before we got married. We were engaged and we were at a Sheva Brachos, and the Kala got up and she said the following vart, which I thought was a fantastic vart. And she said, if you look at the Sheva Brachos, we celebrate all of the elements of the relationship, of the husband-wife relationship. So we talk about ahava, which is so important, and achva, which is also very important. Achva is a sense of brotherhood, which means the difference between ahava and achva is ahava is something you choose. Achva is something that you have, whether, it's not like it's not a choice. You have it, and it's there. It's permanent. It doesn't go away. So both of those are important elements of a marriage. There should be ahava, that you feel that you chose that person, but then once you chose, that it doesn't go away. It's not a temporary relationship. It's a permanent relationship. Shalom. Shalom is obviously a critical part of marriage. V'reyus, and then there's reyus, and there is a notion in Judaism of achron achron chaviv, that we build up to that which is most precious and most beloved. And friendship is one of the most critical elements in a marriage. And if it's one of the most critical elements in a marriage, we have to think back where we learnt that type of relationship. Where did we learn how to be a friend? We learnt it from our friends. We learnt from our friends how to be a friend. So it's a very valuable experience for a child to go through, to be able to have friends that they confide in, that they can talk to, that they can share experiences with. I was just reading the biography of Rav Moshe Twersky, Zichrono Levracha, Hashem Yikom Domo, and the book is called, I forgot what it's called. Malach in our midst, something like that. The man was not, he was not human. He was like on a completely, completely different level. And his chavrusa of 25 years described that for the first 21 years that they learned together, he never once spoke about anything other than learning. Now, if you've ever been involved in a Beis Medrash setting where you're like sort of put into a Beis Medrash and say, okay, study the chavrusa for an hour. You know, on a good day, like 17 to 18 minutes are spent in like real learning, and like, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say that. But even in amongst the best of the best, 50 minutes, 55 minutes. His chavrusa said for over 20 years, he never once mentioned anything that was going on in his life, right, until someone stole a lot of money from him. And he was very distressed, and he shared that with his friend, with his chavrusa, and the conversation lasted about a minute and a half before they started learning. And his chavrusa said that he realized that Rav Twersky knew the Gemara that says da'aga b'lev ish, that if a person is struggling with something, so there are two opinions in the Gemara what to do with that feeling, and different people cope with things differently. And one of the opinions is yasichen el acherim, you have to share it with other people because it helps. It helps get it off your shoulders a little bit so that you're able to deal with whatever troubles one has. That's the value of friendship. That's something the Paskin Koheles tells us. Tov mashnayim min ha'echad, asher yesh lem schar tov ba'amalam, ki yiplu ha'echad, yakim es chavero. If one falls, then the other one will be there. A friend is there to pick someone else up. So it's very important. The values of friendship are something that are very important, something we want to promote. We're not trying to say that in order to keep away from peer pressure, all you need to do is homeschool your kid, lock them up in a room, make sure they don't actually talk to any other people. We don't believe in that. We believe that friendship is critically important. One of the Kinyanei Torah, the Mishnayos talk about how to be Kone Torah, how one can acquire Torah. So it talks about Shimush Tamidei Chachamim. Shimush means that you serve Tamidei Chachamim. You watch them, you observe them, you learn everything that you can from Tamidei Chachamim. I was just at a wedding tonight watching like Rav Meir Twersky, Rav Mordechai Willig. You just watch them and you feel so small because they're on like such a different level. But then it talks about Chaverim and it talks about Dikduk Chaverim. Dikduk Chaverim means you have to be careful. You want to learn, but you have to choose what to learn, what not to learn. You have to be a little more picky when it comes to friends. So how do we deal with the reality of peer pressure? So one thing is, it's very important to encourage friendships with those friends who would be a positive influence, and also just to think about the things that you would want your child to avoid, and whether you're putting them in a position where it's going to be impossible for them to avoid. Meaning, for example, let's say it were a very great value in my family, in our family, that our bar mitzvah boys wear a black hat. Now, for many families, that is a very high value. And that's, you know, there's a tzura of a ben Torah, whatever it is that they're looking for. If that were a high value in my family, and then I sent my kid to DRS, that would be setting him up for failure. Because if it were a high value, how can I put him in a place where nobody else around him has that value? It happens to be it's not a high value in my family. It's something that, you know, if he chooses to do, that's great and wonderful. But I don't feel like I'm setting him up for failure in that in terms of how, now if he values it and he wants to do it, gesundheit, you know, and he says I don't care what everyone else is doing, that's fine. But if it were a value for me, I can't unreasonably expect him to live up to a value that none of his friends are living up to. And this is true when it comes to schools, and it's true when it comes to camps. A lot of times we get so blinded by, you know, an educational model or something that we see that like that really entices us. But we have to think about that the most profound influence in any school or camp setting that our children will have is their friends. That's going to influence them more than their teachers, more than their rebbes, more than the administrators, more than anything else. It's going to be their friends. So we have to think about whether all of their friends are, you know, the principal of my younger kids' school, my younger son's school, Rabbi Kriegsman, sent out a letter recently about choosing a camp for your child. And he said that a lot of parents just have no idea what the camp is like. They're just choosing a camp because he said that some of his friends are going there. And you know, he made a list of things that you should, okay, you could ignore the list, but the idea that a parent has to be cognizant of what exactly is going on there. You know, if the black hat example is a stupid example, but I'm going to use it because it works, and I don't think I'm insulting anybody by saying it. So I happen to go to Camp Cayley every summer. I'm still a kid that goes to camp every summer. So if one wanted to send, if my parents cared very much that I wear a black hat, so they probably shouldn't be sending me to Camp Cayley because not everyone's going to be wearing it. They're not going to force me to do it. And, you know, a kid can wear it, but they're not going to, you know, so if that's something that really matters to you, you have to be aware of the environment that we're putting our kids in. Essentially, there is a concept that Chazal have, ma ya'ase haben velo yachta, that what do you want a kid to do? Meaning you can't put a kid in an environment where everyone's doing something and then say, but I want you to be different. I want you not to do that. It's an unreasonable expectation of a child. But even if we make all the right decisions, and even if we have everything seemingly figured out, it still happens sometimes that we find that we're dealing with negative peer pressure. And it's not just here, it's in any community across the religious spectrum. You know, the Five Towns certainly has its own challenges, certainly comes with unique challenges, but every community has their unique challenges when it comes to peer pressure. So I compiled a quick list of what not to do and what yes to do in consultation with the internet. And here is first we'll go with what not to do. First, apparently all the I ordered a book on Amazon the about this. I've been reading up on it. Apparently the number one thing not to do is don't forbid your kids from hanging out with certain friends. If you tell your kid you cannot hang out with that person is evil and has only a terrible influence on you, that what they hear is, wow, that friend is really cool. that's someone I really want to hang. And what they'll often say is, you don't understand. You don't know what a good person he is. You're just judging from the outside. You're just judging that he comes into our house chain smoking, half undressed, or whatever. You know, but you don't know that what a good neshama, you know, lies underneath all that exterior. You have no idea. And it's not like they're gonna see it or they're gonna understand it. It'll just tune you out. Now you can try to figure out more clever ways to deal with it, but that's not the way to deal with it. Another don't is don't believe your child when they say everybody is doing something. Or Rabbi Krigsman, just to quote him again, he mentioned that they have a pre-bar mitzvah meeting to explain certain. Don't take your kids out of school and all their friends out of school for a week for a getaway bar mitzvah or something, without consulting the school, things like that. Some certain basic rules that have to be set in the Five Towns that I can't imagine have to be set in Bnei Brak. But he said that he got a phone call from a mother saying, from a mother of a sixth grader, saying that my son is the only kid that doesn't have a smartphone. And how am I supposed? He said everybody has a smartphone. And Rabbi Krigsman said, I told her that's very interesting because you are the seventh parent in your in your kid's class to call me this week. So someone was going around telling them that everybody has a smartphone. But don't believe when you hear that everybody has something. What's probably the best move in those kinds of situations is to call up a like-minded parent. Of a friend, I got a call a couple of weeks ago from a parent of a sixth grader, my son Daniel's friend. His parent called up and said, "We're putting together a team of parents that are committing not to buy our kids cell phones until after eighth grade. We all want to commit together on this so that we can make a strong commitment." So I said, make it 11th grade and you have a deal. then Alana said, no, don't. we weren't allowed to sign on. But the idea, I'm not trying to air that dispute right now, but the idea is that if you find a like-minded parent, so very often you can use what they're trying to use against you, in your favor. Another don't is, Ravoli has a very, by now, famous book, Zrio Binyan Bechinuch, Planting and Building in Chinuch, and he describes that there are two types of parents. There are planters and there are builders, and we're supposed to be some hybrid of the two. A planter is someone, the way you plant something is you put a seed in the ground and then it gets watered and sunlight and it can grow in any which direction and you have no idea. It depends on, you just sort of leave it alone and it could grow wild. A builder, but it's growing on its own. A builder takes the materials and puts things together exactly as they want them and constructs the exact item that they're interested in constructing. Some parents just sort of like have the kid and let the kid make all the decisions. The kid will figure it out. The kid will choose what elementary school they go to. They'll just figure it all out. And it goes wild. It can go in any which direction. And sometimes I've seen it where parents have done this and they're mazel. The kid made all the right decisions. And, the parents, I'm pretty confident in those cases, would not have made the right decisions. So sometimes it's a mazel, but that's not a responsible thing for a parent to do. On the other hand, there are some parents that need to micromanage everything in their child's life. Every decision, to check up on every single line of their homework to make sure that everything is done exactly the way they would want it to be done, and it sometimes works, while the kid is still right in front of you. But then the second the kid's not in front of you and you're not able to build him, unless he has no idea which way to go because you're not there to tell him which way to go. So Ravoli develops the idea that we need to be some combination of the two. We need to plant and let it grow on its own, let the child grow with certain parameters, with certain, without neglecting the child entirely. So it's important when it comes to peer pressure, not to become a builder. If we become a builder and we're micromanaging all of their friendships and all of their relationships, the second they have the opportunity to not be observed by us, to not be observed by their parents, they will do whatever they do. They'll do whatever it is they want to do. It's much more important to imbue in them a sense of what is right rather than to force them to do what is right. And there's a ton of research that bears this out, that when children have been told, and in like the silliest kinds of experiments about toys that they had in a room, it's not right to play with that toy for whatever reason, versus you better not play with that toy, I'm watching you. and then they were brought into that same room again with the toy there, those who were told it's not right to it, a much higher percentage of them, even when not being watched, didn't play with it. Or when they thought they weren't being watched, didn't play with it, because they were told it wasn't right, and they understood, it was explained to them in some way why it wasn't right, it belongs to someone else or something like that. When they were told, I'm watching you, you better not do it, the second they felt that they weren't being watched, they would go ahead and do it. One has to be wary of being too much of a builder. Another don't is don't say yes to everything they ask for. It's okay to say no sometimes. It's all right for a child to, you know, it's sometimes the path of least, often the path of least resistance is to just say yes to everything, but it's often a destructive thing. It's okay to have principles, you know. In our house, you know, at this age, we no longer play ball on Shabbos. I don't care what your friends are doing. These are certain, you know, in our house, these kinds of movies are not seen. You know, these are things that are house rules, and that's okay. We can stick to our principles. So those are a few don'ts. Some of the do's, some of the positives. The Rama writes in the first sif in Shulchan Aruch, "V'lo yisbayesh mipnei bnei Adam hamal igim alav ba'avodas Hashem yisbarach," that a person should not be embarrassed from those who might mock him in his avodas Hashem. Meaning, if a person wants to serve Hashem and he's afraid that everyone's going to make fun that he's taking off time in the middle of the day to daven mincha, don't be embarrassed. Take off the time to daven mincha, and we can model that behavior to be steadfast in our commitments, even if it's not socially acceptable. Even when we're in a rush, we're going to take the time to bench properly, let's say, or we're going to take the time to do something properly, even when everyone else around us maybe is not eager to do that and maybe doesn't. If we model that behavior, that's something that will give our kids strength as well. A second what yes to do is just to talk to our kids, to communicate with our kids. Allow them, listen to our kids, allow them to express themselves, play out, you know, after they made a mistake, instead of just yelling at them and sending them to the room, which is sometimes the quickest and easiest way to mete out punishment, let them express what was going through their mind, why they did it, and very often nothing was going through their mind, but at least they'll get a chance to express themselves and play out how a better choice could have been made in that situation. So let's take a step, without yelling, let's take a step back. Let's think about, if you were faced with this situation again, how you could avoid being put in that tough spot where that tremendous pleasure is going to hit of having everyone approve of you. Kids often don't even know what's expected of them. And even if they do know it, verbalizing it clearly gives them a mental roadmap to follow. If you tell them, you know, here's what's going to happen, here's what I want you to do when this happens. So they already have it in their head. That if that, you know, it's one, you could have the following two conversations. You tell a child, oh my God, this place is a mess, clean up everything now! So they were just having a great time. And they had planned that the rest of their day was going to go a certain way. And you just, right there, boom, everything just changed. Now I'm going to be stuck cleaning up forever. It's going to take forever. It's not going to take 2 minutes, like you say. It's going to be forever. The rest of my life, I'm going to be cleaning up this playroom. And then, or it could be like, okay, in about 15 minutes, we're going to start cleaning up. Where they have time to think about, okay, when the clock hits 15 minutes, I will then be able to clean up. So the same thing works. You know, that's something about with very young children. The same thing works when it comes to social situations as well. You just play out before your kid goes away for a Shabbos. Most kids will not intuitively know that they're supposed to help clear the table. You tell them, look, you're going to be at someone else's house. Try to be as helpful as you can. That means, you know, there are some kids that just like have it and just like have this chesed gene. mine don't, but there are some kids that just have it. But most kids, they need it to be explained to them. Like this is what we expect you to do, and they'll do it. They'll do it. They just need to be told exactly so that they can map it out in their heads. A third very important do is that a lot of times we take for granted that the right choices will be made, and when the right choices are made, of course, that's what I expect. It's worth while to focus on the right choices, on when kids do the right thing. If you notice that your child was facing a peer pressure situation and did the right thing, to acknowledge that, to notice it before they even tell you about it. One of our children doesn't give us a chance. Whenever he does something that even like looks like it might be positive, is immediately shouting it from the rooftops. But that just speaks to his need for approval for all the right decisions. And many children will react, and people, by the way, adults also react in a very positive way to just positive feedback. A lot of bosses don't realize this. Rule number one of being a boss is you give positive feedback, you'll have a motivated employee. If you don't give positive feedback, you're not going to have a motivated employee. Dan Ariely is one of the leading social scientists in the world today, who's an Israeli Jew, happens to be, gives the mashal about how people think that like money motivates people. And the research tells us money is needed in order to like put food on the table, but it doesn't really motivate people as much as one would think. And he gives the mashal. He says, you're at Thanksgiving dinner, and your mother-in-law like looks forward to Thanksgiving the whole year. And she, for us, we would probably use like a Pesach Seder or something like that. You know, this meal is like the meal that she works so hard on, and she put so much effort into, and and everything's going great, and everything tastes delicious, and at the end of the meal you get up and you say, "Wow, Mom, that was fantastic. Here, I got 20 bucks. That was fantastic. Here, what kind of look would you? Oh, it's not enough. I got 25. Is that enough?" It's just, it doesn't express what she wants to hear. What does she want to hear at that moment? Thank you. This was a fantastic meal. And the truth, it's not, he uses that as like an outlandish example, but most situations are Thanksgiving dinner situations. They're not, accepting job offer A or job offer B situations, where very often the money is going to be what determines it. Most situations in life, and especially for kids, it's not about just throwing money at them or whatever. It's about just giving positive feedback, just letting them know that that you appreciate their efforts, and that will give them the strength to make the right choice in the future. Another positive action that should be done is you should know who your kids are hanging out with, meaning know their families, know who the families are, drive them to the house to drop them off so you can get a sense. Even more important than that, make your house the place where everyone hangs out. It's a good investment to buy a ping pong table or something, where and a lot of snacks on a Shabbos afternoon, so that your house will be the place where the kids hang out. There are two types of houses. There are the houses where if you go there on Shabbos afternoon, you're not allowed to make a sound because daddy's sleeping. So if in a house like that, the kids are not going to want to hang out. But if it's a house where there's always tons of Jolly Ranchers, and there's it's just my favorite. That's why I go to Chabur every week. But there's always see, it works. There's always tons of food and fun, and it's so then your house becomes the place to be, and that then you can observe who the kids are hanging out with. So that's a very helpful thing, a very helpful way for you to know who the kids are and to know what kind of environment they're in. Most importantly, probably, is just to make sure your house for your own child is a safe and comfortable environment, where a child has self-confidence that comes from the home, where he comes from a place, he or she comes from a place where it's a happy place, and where they can develop a sense of self-confidence. Rabbi Dr. Twersky from Milwaukee, who's a famous psychiatrist, right? He's a psychiatrist. Who wrote, I don't know, something like 60, 70 books or something like that. He often likes to say that he didn't really write 60 or 70 books. He only wrote one book. He just wrote it in 60 or 70 different ways. One time he wrote it in, and the one book is really one sentence. You need to have children need to have self-esteem. They need to have a certain sense of self-confidence and awareness of who they are and what they stand for and what they're about. Sometimes, one time he wrote it in the form of psychological jargon, and another time he wrote it in the form of Chassidus HaMaiselach. But in whatever form he's writing it in, that has to come from the home. Rav Kook writes, Rav Moshe Weinberger quoted, Rav Kook writes, Rak b'ma'amad shiflus ha-nefesh, when a person is feeling low, yis'orer cheshek lehis hader lifnei acherim. when a person is feeling low, when a person doesn't have that sense of self, he tends to want to build himself up, to brag, to show off in front of others. And here's the key. Bein b'ma sheyesh bo, bein b'ma she'ein bo. Whether it be with something that they actually have, something that's unique to me, that's actually a skill of mine. If, let's say, for a boy, I know boys, if a boy is a really great ball player, so he'll want to draw attention to athletics because that's what makes him feel good. But if he's not a really good ball player and that's what his friends value, so even b'ma she'ein bo, even something that doesn't come naturally to him, he'll start pretending to be somebody else. Where does that come from? Why would a kid do things that aren't him, that aren't her, that aren't what they're really about? Because they're b'ma'amad shiflus ha'nefesh. They're in a situation where they feel low. They don't feel like they have self-worth and self-confidence. Va'al kein chayiv ha'adam lahagdil es roshem ha'shleimus ha'pnimus. So Rav Kook says we have to work on this. We have to work on a sense of self. And ultimately that comes from a stable home environment, to the extent that we're able to create a happy and stable home environment where we value our children, we value their uniqueness, we value what each one brings to the family. We realize that they're not all exactly the same, and they're not all cookie cutter molds of exact. You know, Dr. Palkovitz likes to talk about the bumper stickers of the family. You know, Harvard or die, or whatever. You know, that family is, and where every kid has to fit into exactly that mold. We recognize the uniqueness in our children. I know many times, Moriv Rabbi Rav Willig was asked about his really, amazing children, who are very, very different from each other, but each one, tremendous B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah, who are leaders of communities throughout the world, and his first thing he says is that it wasn't him, it was his wife, but then he says that, and my wife was able to appreciate the difference between each child, and that this child needed to be in a black hat yeshiva for high school, and that child needed to be in a modern Orthodox high school, and that child needed to be, and what each child needed at different stages in their life. Ironically, it happened to be that his most serious learner of all of his children he sent to the modern Orthodox high school, because it was a high school that didn't have a tremendous amount of structure during secular studies, so he knew the kid would just sit and learn all day. So they in that school, and that's what happened. The kid went to that school and just sat and learned all day. But recognizing each kid's kochos, each kid's abilities, and being able to tap into that, that's ultimately what parenting is all about. So again, I'm going to close just with a repeat of the statement that I started with. I know nothing about this topic. I don't really have any sense of expertise, but these are just a few thoughts from a fellow parent who's been thinking about this for a week and should have been thinking about this probably for the last 18 years, how to navigate these situations. And let's just remind ourselves that we're not perfect. We're not always going to handle things in a calm way and roadmap every situation. But to the extent that we can try to work toward that goal of being level-headed, building up our kids' confidence and knowledge of who they are, while also knowing when to tighten the reins just a bit to make sure that they understand that we have standards, and never to ever forget that we have to daven for our children, we have to daven for their success, and in that merit of trying to do the right thing and being completely l'shem shemayim, a lot of times parents want their kids to do certain things because it reflects well on the parents. We have to make sure that we're not asking our kids to do things because that's going to make me look good. We want them to do things because it's what's best for them, and if we do things l'shem shemayim, and we daven for our children, and we try to learn how to navigate each kid's personality, we should be zocha that they should only learn the greatest, most positive values of friendship from their friends, and they should model those values to their friends and become a positive influence on everyone around them.